Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Welcome back. 810 and Change Sports to Max. Bernie Cucaro will join us at 8:30 to talk about some of the questionable calls in the NFL. Bernie, of course, a Super Bowl referee and one of our locals, one of our favorites. He'll join us tonight to talk about just that. Speaking of legends, speaking of locals, there is no greater local legend than Sid Hartman in these parts, particularly on WCCO Radio in the Star Tribune. He joins us now. Sidney, how are you tonight?
I'm okay.
Let's start with the Vikings. You did not expect them to win.
Well, it was a big win for them. I think that puts them in real good shape as far as the remaining schedule. The way the Bears are going crazy, but I don't think that's going to be a continue-on thing. They haven't played anybody so far. But I think DeFilippo, the offensive coordinator, knew so much about Philadelphia, especially about that quarterback Wirtz, that he was a big factor in them winning. That's what I think. I think they got to him all night. I think the offensive coordinator knew what the weaknesses were in the offensive line, knew every other weaknesses in that defense, and I think he played a big part. And of course, Thielen is getting to be the best wide receiver in football. He's unbelievable. Then he picks up that kick at the end and saves the game. But he right now is on a way. He's got five straight games. He's got 100 yards or more. If he gets 100 next Sunday against Arizona, that'll be an all-time record in the NFL.
Wow. Just unbelievable, his career, where he came from and where he is today. But Sid, why were you so pessimistic about the Vikings going into that game?
Not optimistic?
Yeah, you were not optimistic at all yesterday morning when we did the radio show.
I weren't that optimistic.
No, how come?
You weren't optimistic either.
Yeah, I was. I thought they'd have a good game plan, and I said it on the air.
After what happened last year with that 38-17, there was no reason to be optimistic. But I think that the Philadelphia, they've lost three games now. They're not the same team they were last year. They lost several free agents, like the kid from Wayzata, that was an outstanding lineman.
Minnetonka, actually, Bo Allen, yeah.
He went to Tampa.
Yep.
They lost a couple wide receivers. They are not the same team they were last year.
That's a good point. The Minnesota Timberwolves have got to get a deal done here sooner or later, or Jimmy Butler has to play. It does no good to have neither one. They don't have Butler. They don't have a trade done, Sid.
My opinion, and I could be wrong, is that your buddy and my buddy, Thibodeau, still has hopes of keeping Butler. He thinks he can talk him into saying, I don't think there's any way Glenn Taylor is going to pay Thibodeau $190 million that he has to pay him in order to keep him. Have put him $30 million over the
salary cap.
And they thought they had a deal, according to ESPN, they thought they had a deal with Miami, but that fell through. And They're just playing terrible. I mean, if they don't get some deal made, they're going to get killed. They haven't come close. They got killed by Clippers. They got killed by Oklahoma City. And last night, Milwaukee beat them bad. They are not a very good team right now without Butler.
You know, obviously they're in a bad spot right now. They've got Towns and Wiggins and Teague. What would you do when you're running the Lakers if you were getting caught in a pickle like this? How would you handle it?
I think Wiggins has been a disappointment. I think they should have never given Wiggins all that money, and I think they should have traded Wiggins. He had some trade. Well, I don't think he set the world on fire. And with this Wiggins, Towns has got to play better than he's playing right now. And they're in trouble right now. I mean, I don't know what's going to happen with that Butler trade. The thing is, Will, what do you think? You think he's going to play this year? So far, he hasn't reported to play.
No, I don't think he's going to play for the Timberwolves. I think they have to trade him.
If he wants to get paid, he has to play. And I think he'll want to get paid. I think he's getting paid big money. So I think he'd report one of these days. He's supposed to have a bad wrist. I think that's a bunch of malarkey.
I think you're absolutely right, Sid. The Gopher football team, what was your takeaway from Saturday?
You know what? In all the history of the Gopher football team, they've never been a 32-point underdog.
Yeah.
They're a 30-point underdog to play Ohio State. I think Ohio State, they'll score as whatever they want. They got one of the great teams in the country. They got that quarterback who's going to win the Heisman Award. They got two tough games. They got to play even at Nebraska. That won't be easy. But they got so many freshmen. You don't play with freshmen and win many games.
Who is Urban Meyer, the coach at Ohio State? You know him.
I got to know him very well when he was on Lou Holtz's staff at Notre Dame. He was an assistant coach at Notre Dame, and I got to know him very well. In fact, Lou Holtz got him all the big jobs he's got. He got a job at Bowling Green. He got a job some played out of West.
Utah.
And Holtz was a guy that got him all these jobs.
Then he went to Florida, remember?
Yeah.
But he's done pretty well.
How about the Great Wild? They're 0-2.
Yeah, what's your take on that?
Now they play the Blackhawks Thursday night.
Why do you think they're 0-2 based on what you've seen so far? What's been the problem?
They did not add anybody to last year's team. It's the same team they had last year. They got eliminated in the playoff by Winnipeg. Of course, they had some injured players at the time, a couple of players, big players injured at the time. We'll see what happens. They're not I see they're advertising tickets, too, so they're not sold out. So we'll see what happens.
The Minnesota Twins fired Paul Maurer last week. There's lots of questions as to how they're going to go forward with this. What will be the ideal manager to replace Paul Maurer?
Well, I have no idea. I think that the guy that Levine and Farley brought over from Cleveland, where he managed for 2 years, and he was the bench manager, he was the number one assistant for Maurer. Maurer, I don't think, wanted to hire him, but Levine and Farley brought him over there. I think he's a leading candidate.
Will he be good?
I don't know if he'd be good. I don't think anybody will be as good as Maurer. I think Maurer was doing a great job. This was not the time to fire Maurer.
I agree.
I think right now they got no chance to get Maurer back now. They had a chance with Maurer. They got no chance. And I don't think Esposito, what's the guy they traded to Arizona?
Who are you talking about? Escobar?
Yeah, Escobar. I don't think he'll come back either. I thought he'd come back with Molitor.
Well, but even if you get him, you still got a lot more holes to fill. Would you give up on Miguel Sano and just cut him loose?
Pardon me?
Would you give up on Miguel Sano and just cut him loose?
I don't know about that. What do you think?
Well, I said you didn't hear me. Miguel Sano, the Twins. Would you just release him?
Give up who?
On Sano.
I don't know. I don't think anybody wants him.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Nobody's going to make a deal for him. Yeah. Give anything for him. They have no assurance that the guy can play next year. Then he gets in trouble in his hometown. That was no bargain either.
Yeah, that might be blown out of proportion. We don't know yet, but still, he's had a number of things. John Gilardi's passing, we talked about a little bit yesterday in the sports huddle, but you knew John Gilardi very well.
Okay, thanks for calling. You do a fantastic job. Now, I didn't know that you had got a show on WCCO 5:30 to 6:30 with Harrison Smith.
Yeah.
Every Monday.
Latavius Murray was on out there with us, too.
Maybe I'll come over and go on with you one day.
Will you do that?
Yeah.
We can get you a free dinner out there.
I'll do that. I'll talk to you maybe next week.
Okay, buddy. Appreciate you.
You are the best in the business. People, CCO and Channel 4 should appreciate how hard you work and what a great job you do.
Love you, buddy. Sid Hartman, nice enough to join us on WCCO. And I asked him about John Gilardi, and he said, okay, that's it. That means I've talked to you long enough, and I didn't hear the question. Bernie Kukar, not far away, and more. This is Sports to the Max at WCCO. Ron Shira, ladies and gentlemen. Can you not see him, Shaletta, knowing Ron like you do now, in that very outfit? Dapper, young, good-looking guy.
Smelling good.
Smelling good. Walked in, apricot scarf. He still got the apricot scarf.
No way.
He does, and the hat. And, you know, you say, well, where did Ron go to party? Well, wherever Ron showed up, that's where the party was, you know? It was a different time, a different era in the 60s and 70s, you know?
Oh, man. Do we have any pictures to share? I would love to see
them.
We
do. They're like Polaroids, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
We thought that was pretty good. We could get an instant picture of a Polaroid. Remember that?
I do.
Yeah.
I do.
And now everything's on the phone and whatnot. But, yeah, Ron used to kind of hold court, and wherever he showed up, I mean, if there was a boat in docking and he walked out to the boat, the party started, you know?
Mm.
And, well, you can imagine him with that kind of a hat and that kind of a... good-looking guy like that.
Gotta see the photos.
Yeah, a good-looking guy like Ron, you know? Those were the days, I'm just telling you. And now, you know, and then he had some camouflage clothing that he'd mix in there as well because, you know, he mixed it in with his hunting and he didn't want to completely lose his image.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But, and so sometimes he'd wear like a camouflage hat or something like that, you know, or a blaze orange scarf. It was kind of his way of saying, I might be cool, but I'm still Ron. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So next week, are you going to be here next week?
I will.
I'll see if I'll bring in any of those pictures, okay?
Please.
Okay?
He's still one cool guy.
He's still one cool dude, just a little older cool dude. That's it. But he's still got the apricot scarf. I don't know how many times he wears it a year. I think he wore it the other day. He was emceeing some banquet, he said, the other night. And I think he wore it at least for the pre-party or something like that, I was told. I don't know, but we'll figure it out. Bernie Kukar has refereed in the Super Bowl. The main guy, twice. He's like one of the best referees ever in the NFL. So what's going on in the NFL with all these calls? We'll call him to find out when we come back on Sports to the Max. Oh, yeah, the championship song, NFL football. Mike Max with you, Bernie Kukar. Longtime NFL official, and we will get to a bunch of that in a minute. Bernie is also a St. John's graduate and heavy hearts across the state and certainly in the St. John's family for sure. You knew John Gilardi very well, Bernie Kukar.
Very well indeed. I had many contacts with him even after my playing days were over, Mike.
Well, explain John Gilardi.
Boy, that is a tough one. In one word, very interesting. He was a man outside of football. I'll tell you a story I don't think I've ever told anybody before. And this goes back to when I was a senior in college, and we were a pretty good football team at that time. We were knocking everybody around, and in fact, our record, I think, was undefeated at the time. And so a lot of the freshmen and sophomores were getting a lot of playing time because we would be in the first team guys would be until halftime, and then they would take over. And those are the four runners that were the freshmen and sophomore. They got a lot of playing time, and that was the first year that they won the national championships two years later.
Sure.
But to get to the story, so we're going into late in the season, I think sometime in October. I don't exactly remember the date anymore. But all of a sudden, I got a phone call from my hometown. Good friends of mine, a family, had suffered a tragic event. A good friend of mine, their daughter was killed in a car crash. So I get this phone call, and the family wanted me to come up there to be one of the pallbearers. And I said, well, when is the funeral? And blah, blah, blah. And they said, well, it's on Saturday.
Sure.
And I said, my God, I got a football game on Saturday. So I said, I'll tell you what, let me get back to you. So I went over to John Gilardi immediately, and I said, John, I got a little bit of a problem. I told him the problem, and he looked at me. He said, you get your butt in that car and get up there right now. Football means nothing.
Really?
That was it. Yep. I thought, boy, I thought I was going to be crucified for missing a football game, but he just laid it right on the line. He says, football means nothing at this point. They want you up there. You get up there. Don't worry about it.
Is that right?
Yeah. That tells you what kind of a man he was.
Yeah, he said.
I got so many stories, Mike. Too bad he didn't call me about 6:30. We could have filled up the whole time frame.
Well, he was obviously a much younger coach then. Did he change with age, or was he always the same?
Well, I don't think he changed at all. When he was coaching me, I think he was 30 years old at the time. He came to St. John's in 1953, and I came there in 1958. And that's another story in itself. He called me up, when I was looking at the school, and I had no idea where St. John's was. And he said, we want you to come down here and play football for us and blah, blah, blah. You got to get down here in the middle of August or whatever it was. And I said, well, I don't know, John. I was kind of humming and hawing because I'm thinking, here I am, a kid from the swamps of northern Minnesota, going to be competing against all these big guys from Minneapolis, St. Paul, St. Cloud. I don't know if I really want to do that.
Yep.
So I told him, well, I don't know, John. I think I might just stick with basketball this first year. So I did, and I went down to St. John's, and the school started, and I go watch football practice, and I'm thinking, holy smokes, I think I can compete at this level.
Yeah.
So this is we're about 2 or 3 weeks into the season already. So I walked up to John one day, and I said, John, is it too late to come out for the football team? And he says, if you don't get down into that training room right now and get some equipment and within the next 10 minutes, yeah, it's going to be too late.
Yeah. So you did?
I did.
So that's how your football career started, huh?
Yeah, it did. And at that time, the freshmen weren't eligible. So,
sure.
We had a freshman team. So that's basically where you started. And that's how my career started with John Gilardi. I thought for sure he'd say, too late, go away.
Yeah.
I don't want to bother with you. But no, and he, as you well know, he never cut anybody.
I mean,
in our day, now they got 170 to 200 guys. We had probably about 80 to 90, right, in that range someplace. But that still was a lot back in that time frame. And keeping in mind that we didn't have two platoon football at the time. It was all, everybody plays both ways.
Oh, sure, yeah, right. Yeah. So it's like double the size, yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah, was he tough on referees?
Yeah, he was someone tough on referees. That's another story in itself. And how I got
started. Did you ever work a St. John's game as a referee?
I did.
You did? They allowed that?
Well, I worked a so-called non-conference game, one of the early games. And I'll never forget that. I was up there, and there was a play that ended up right in front of the bench. And I ran up there, and I look, and I signal first down. And the chains are way across the field on the other side, and he's standing right next to me. He's like, holy cow. He wasn't afraid to throw a few expletive deletes.
That's right.
Holy cow. You got some good eyes. And I looked at him. I said, John, I had to have good eyes to play for you. And all the players look at me, play for you? I said, yeah. So I turned around and walked away, and he was smiling. Yeah. But, yeah, he was kind of tough on officials. And then as when I started getting into the business, and that, again, is another story, it's primarily because of John Gagliardi that I moved into the officiating ranks. Well, I was a senior at St. John's. I went to see the first Minnesota Viking football game when they played the Chicago Bears.
Yep.
And I walked out, got into the Metropolitan Stadium, and I was kind of in the end zone, and I'm looking around and thinking, holy smokes, this is kind of something. And then all of a sudden, I see the officials walk out, and I'm thinking, maybe that's the way to get at this business. So I go back to St. John's, and we're still in the middle of the football season, kind of, because I think the first game was the first part of September.
Sure.
So, you know, our games are just starting up at that point. So I went to John, and I said, John, what do you think about maybe after my career is over, getting into the officiating side of things? And he looked at me and said, are you out of your mind or what? And I said, why? He said, you're good enough to play. What do you want to fool around with that for? I said, John, St. John's is not a big school.
Yeah.
If you're not coming out of major college, there's only like six teams at the time.
Sure.
Nobody's going to look at you. He said, well, maybe that's not such a bad idea.
Yeah.
And from that point on, I started in the high school ranks, and just went up the line for 21 years in the college ranks, and then after that course, right into the NFL. But if it wasn't for John Gagliardi, I probably would have not pursued that whole adventure.
Well, those are great stories, Bernie. Transitioning into the NFL and yesterday, and everybody's saying, how can Michael Bennett be called for roughing the passer? Ultimately, do you think the commissioner is smiling and he's saying, I know everybody's going to complain for a while, but we're making it a safer game, and at some point in time, I'll be able to prove it. I'll be able to maybe come out with some statistics that say, hey, we had less concussions. Do you think at the home office that they're just kind of winking, going, that's okay to call them, even if they're bad calls?
Yeah, I don't know if they're bad calls. I think it's more that points of emphasis, because we've had those rules in place for a number of years. When I was still on the field, you could not drop your total body weight on top of a quarterback. That was a no-no. We had those calls a lot, and then the same thing with the helmet. You couldn't drive your helmet into these guys, because the targets now, even in my day, the target was from the waist up to the neck. And that's what the players had to focus on. And that's basically still true today, except now they made it a point of emphasis, and that's because of the concussion business. But I'm sure that, he's probably smiling, and so is the competition committee, because they're the guys that set the rules, and they make all the decisions as to how they want these things called. You know, they're in the NFL, there's the rule book. There's also a philosophy of rules. And that's part of it. So, you know, the philosophy being, for example, you know, I got this question a number of times. Is it true that you could call holding on every play in the NFL? And I always say, well, yes, it's true if you applied the high school and the college rules, but not the NFL rules. That's not true. And they say, well, everybody's grabbing on. I said, yeah, that's what they do. The first thing every offensive lineman does, he goes up and grabs a hold of the shirt of the guy. It's not a fall if he's dancing with them. But as soon as that guy, the defender, tries to make a move, like at the point of attack, and all of a sudden he gets turned, twisted, or pulled, now it becomes a fall. In the college ranks, as soon as he grabbed onto his shirt, it would have been a fall. So the points of emphasis this year, of course, is they don't want these quarterbacks hurt, and that's probably as a result of Aaron Rodgers from last year, if you recall.
Yeah, right.
I have to remind you of that one. But yeah, I think they want to protect the quarterbacks, because they are very vulnerable. And let's face it, they're probably the face of the franchise. If your quarterback gets knocked out of the game, you're probably not going to win many games. And I'm watching the game right now with Drew Brees.
He just set the record, right?
I mean, if he would have got knocked out of this game, there would not be anywhere near the score that it is right now.
Yeah, that's right. They're winning big 26-6.
Yeah.
Was Drew Brees an easy guy to work? You worked him.
What's that?
You worked Drew Brees a little bit when he was younger.
Yeah. No, he never said that. I'll tell you what. All the real good quarterbacks hardly ever say anything on it.
Because they're so into their game, huh?
They are. And it's also true that the not-so-great quarterbacks, you know, the middle-of-the-road type guys, they're always complaining about something. So that's been my experience. I know a number of times when I was asked this question, and I used to do a lot of public speaking at Rotary clubs and health clubs and those kind of things. And one of the questions somebody would always ask, well, who's the guy that stands out in your mind the most on a football field? And I said, well, I don't know if I could name one, but I certainly could name two. And I said, Walter Payton and Brett Favre, those are the guys that are playing this game for the love of the game. They never say anything. They're just enjoying themselves. They got a smile on their face all the time. And they're very courteous out there. They never say a word about the officials.
Huh. That says something. Bernie, Mike Zimmer said today at his press conference, he said they're talking about how efficient these quarterbacks are right now. And he said, you know, they've changed the rules enough for receivers and players because last year defense was at an all-time high and the league gets what the league wants and the league wanted more offense. How does that get translated to officials?
Well, they just put in these points of emphasis. The rules are always there. And if you want to go back a number of years now, that's when they stuck in the rule of illegal contact. You know, it used to be that the defensive backs would go up there and play tight and just bang these guys all the way down the field.
Yep.
Well, it was pretty hard to complete passes when you're doing that. So then they put the rule of illegal contact, which says you can hit the guy 5 yards from the line of scrimmage, but once he gets past 5 yards, you cannot touch him anymore. And that's why, because they wanted more scoring. And that definitely proved to be the case because they looked at statistics, which they always do. You know, they got all this stuff in New York. And they say, you know, we're down by average points. The fans don't want to see a 6-3 game. They want to see a 32-29 type game. So that's probably what you're looking at right now. And that's why you see the scores the way they are, and the passing is the big focus in the game these days. And running attacks don't seem to go very far. All they're in there for is to loosen up the defense so you can throw the ball a little bit more.
Yep. Now, would Roger Goodell make that call, or who decides, who says, hey, we got to change this? Is it him or is it somebody else?
Well, I think Roger has a big input into it, but it's primarily the competition committee and the owners. They get together. Competition committee is made up, at least in my day, I don't know if it's changed since, but it was, at that time it was made up of 3 coaches, 3 general managers, and 3 owners. And so they get a pretty good feel throughout the league as to what these owners want. The owners are the guys that dictate all the terms in the NFL. They dictate everything, including the rules. But the competition committee, what they do, they'll get together to discuss what rules they want changed. And if anybody wants a rule changed of some type or another, something happened during the course of the season, they'll just, you know, send that information into the competition committee and it will be discussed. And sometimes they say, well, no, we're not going to fool around with that. And other times they say, you know, and they got a good point there. Maybe we should look at this. And they'll go through a whole lot of discussion about this, that, and everything. And then they will make a recommendation to the owners a month or two later down the road as to what they think should be done, and invariably the owners will probably go along with it. Very few times they say, no, we don't want to do that at this point.
Are you comfortable now with what a catch is? Yeah, for last year we had to debate that all year.
I don't know if you're ever comfortable.
Yeah,
with that.
I guess.
I can tell you this. One time when I was on the field, they changed the definition of a catch 4 times.
In a season?
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
So, you know, it used to be easy when we didn't have instant replay focusing on everything and slow mowing down, you know, to every frame, you can see, well, did he really have control of the football and blah, blah, blah. If they would have left it up to the official and not put it on instant replay, it was if they caught the ball and did something common to the game of football, then anything after that is a fumble. Up until that point, it's incomplete at best, and we never had any controversy with it.
All right, Bernie, God let you go. We'll do it again soon. Always appreciate it. Thanks for your stories on John and the NFL.
I'll tell you what, we're going to miss him a lot.
Yeah.
He was quite the guy. And I got to say one more thing. He actually was 60 years ahead of his time. And by that, I mean, now you see all this business with concussions. And so now the players are very seldom they have contact anymore in practices. We never had contact ever. And so he was doing that 60 years ago. Now it's come full circle. It's back to the way it was when John was first teaching that.
It's a wonderful legacy to have. Thanks, Bernie.
You're very welcome, mate. Call me anytime.
You bet. Always fun to visit with my friend Bernie Kukar. Boy, he's been to the top of the mountain as a referee in the NFL. Take a break. Come back. Al Malmberg will wet our whistle on what he's got coming up. This is Sports to the Max. This is News Talk 830 WCCO. Welcome back, Sports to the Max, News Radio 830 WCCO. Interesting, talking about the rules with Bernie Kukar, Al Malmberg.
Oh, man. That was fascinating. I caught the last half hour, and it was really interesting.
Yeah.
Well, talking about the great Joe Gilardi.
Oh, well, could he coach?
Oh, man. Well, what a legend.
Who was your coach at Golden Valley?
That's a good question. I'm trying.
That might explain why you didn't get in the game much, Al. If you didn't know Coach's name,
I'd go, "Hey, you, put me in." Erickson, Coach Erickson.
Okay. What kind of like, did you run a sophisticated offense? Was it mainly run the ball? What?
How would I know? I was on the bench all the time.
What did the guys tell you? Did they say they're running it or not?
The guys would come off the field, whether they were offering some decent defense, and they'd sit down and they'd go, "What happened?"
Shaletta likes that one, Al.
I was in the head. What happened?
You made me spit. I was.
She was laughing so hard, Al.
How am I supposed to know? I did average 33 yards a catch, Mike.
Did you really?
Well, I had one catch.
What was the situation?
I had one catch.
But when did that? Was it a key catch? Was it a, what was it?
Oh, I don't. I think it was our homecoming game.
Okay, but I mean, was it like a key to the victory, or was it like
end
of the
game? Was it a last-second touchdown? Or
we didn't win any games that year.
Really?
Yeah, the next year, the Golden Valley was ranked 18th in the country.
Oh, wow.
In small college, and went to the JUCO Bowl. But the year I played was we were pretty lousy.
I got heavily recruited by Golden Valley and offered a scholarship to play basketball and baseball there, and I didn't do it. And every time I drive by that campus, I just think about that because it looks like such a neat place.
It was. It was. You know, it's a college that we need today.
Yes, you're absolutely right.
Yeah, it was a great place.
Great alternative.
School. Yeah, it was a great place. And I'll tell you what, the Bernd Opsahl, the president of the college, was so dedicated to not only academics but to having good sports programs. You know,
yep.
I mean, he hired Flip Saunders, for crying out loud. Yep. As it was his first head basketball coaching job. Irv Eniger, another great basketball coach. Larry McDowell came in the year after I was there, and he played football at the University of Iowa. His brother Lane McDowell played at Iowa and he went to the New England Patriots. And Larry turned that program around and became a real powerhouse. I mean, it was
I love those gold, purple and gold uniforms too.
They were great. Yeah. They were great. Yeah. You know?
Hey, what's coming up on the show?
We're going to talk about the Electoral College a little bit and other stuff. But
people can't get over that, can they?
No.
The reason that Electoral College works is you campaign to where all the states. The popular election means nothing because if it was the popular, then you'd campaign only in the big cities where they had the populace.
Exactly. I'm trying to figure out why people in contemporary times think they were smarter than the founding fathers.
They sure do. I mean, whenever it doesn't go their way, at least.
Exactly. Yeah. That's why they want to change it.
Yeah.
You know, and you, Mike, you are so right. If we had no Electoral College, if we got rid of it, they'd be campaigning on the East Coast and West Coast, and that would be it.
Yep, you might hit Houston and Chicago, you know?
Maybe, yeah. That'd be it.
Yep.
They wouldn't be campaigning in Minneapolis.
No, or Wyoming because it's a swing state, or Utah, whatever, you know?
Yep, that's right.
What if I showed you this?
What is that?
I don't know. Oh, that
what
was
on
my
end.
I pushed some papers, and it moved up a sliding pot and gave you some audio that you didn't want to hear.
Al, you just do whatever you need to do during the commercial break there. Al Malmberg's coming up next, I think.
Yes.
Depending on what we heard there, right after this on WCCO. It was a different time, a different era.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.